Shalom, everyone. I'm Josiah Jeffrey.
I'm Hosea Jeffrey.
And we're back discussing the Torah portions. This week, we're looking at the portion of Nitzavim, which goes from Deuteronomy 29:9 or 29:10 if you're reading a Christian translation, through 30:20. On some years, this portion is read along with the next portion, Vayelech. So be sure to check the pinned comment below to see if you should read both portions or just this one this week. We've already read the portion ahead of time, so if you'd like to read it as well, why don't you go ahead and pause the video and do that, and then we'll go ahead and get into discussing.
In Nitzavim, Moses makes a covenant with Israel at the plains of Moab, calling on them to choose between the blessing of life and the curse of death, and promising that God will confirm Israel's calling as his people and cause them to love him with all their heart and soul and receive life.
So this portion begins with Moses telling the people of Israel that he is making a covenant between God and the people of Israel here in the plains of Moab. As we discussed in the previous portion, Moses had laid out a bunch of blessings and curses for the people of Israel, depending on whether or not they'd be obedient or disobedient. And right at the end of the portion, we read that Moses was giving the words of a covenant to be made here in the plains of Moab, in addition to the covenant that was made back at Mount Sinai, all the way back in the book of Exodus. Moses says here to the people of Israel, "You stand today, all of you, before Adonai your God, your chiefs, your tribes, your elders, and your officers, even all the men of Israel, your little ones, your wives, and the sojourner who is within your camps, that you may enter into the covenant with Adonai your God, and into his oath which Adonai your God is making with you today, in order that he may establish you today as his people, and that he may be your God, just as he spoke to you, and as he swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob." So Moses points out that the entire people of Israel is here. He's not just making this with a few of them. He's making this to everybody nationally, all the people of Israel. And he's saying that the purpose of this covenant here at Moab is to establish the people of Israel as God's people. Now, this is really interesting because the people of Israel have always been God's people. Even all the way back in the book of Exodus, God sent Moses to Pharaoh saying, "Let my people go." So even way before this, the people of Israel have been God's people. And like Moses says here, it's because of what God swore to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. That oath has already been around for about 500 years by this point, but here Moses is basically causing that to stand. He's really establishing that and making it so that the people of Israel are enjoining themselves to the call to be God's people.
Yeah, I mean, it's very interesting here that Moses is specifically saying that this is a covenant to establish Israel as God's people, as he promised you and as he swore to your fathers. So he's saying it right there, that this covenant is to establish what was already promised. And so this shows that even though Moses is making another covenant on top of the other covenants that we've seen, its whole purpose is to confirm and build on what was already promised. That's how God's covenants work. They don't replace one another or annul one another. Rather, each covenant is meant to confirm what came before it, build on it, make it possible, and bring God's promises to fruition. Now, it's specifically worth noting that Moses clarifies that this is a covenant besides the one which he already made at Sinai. We already talked about that covenant before in Exodus, and as we talked about then, Israel being God's people was also a component of that covenant. The terms that God set for Israel at that covenant were, "Now therefore, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, you shall be my treasured possession among all peoples, for all the earth is mine, and you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation." So this covenant at Sinai was conditional. If you obey my voice, you will be my people. If you keep my covenant, you will be my holy nation. And the people of Israel agreed to that covenant on their part when they said, "All that Adonai has spoken, we will do." And Moses confirmed that covenant with blood. So that was a covenant that established Israel's peoplehood. But it was on the basis that they kept the covenant, that they obeyed it and listened to God's voice. God set this condition, and then the people of Israel agreed to it. But then the people of Israel broke it. But even though the people of Israel broke it, God was willing to remake that same covenant because of his promises to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So the Sinai covenant was itself a confirmation of the Abrahamic covenant. But it didn't work because the people of Israel broke it. And even after God remade it, the people of Israel continued to rebel against his voice over and over and over again. In fact, Moses says here as he's making this covenant at Moab, "But to this day, Adonai has not given you a heart to understand, or eyes to see, or ears to hear." So the people of Israel were still hard. They were still not listening to God's voice and not obeying him. And so the Sinai covenant, which was, "If you keep my commands, you will be my treasured possession," the people of Israel were failing in that. They kept breaking the covenant. And we've talked about before how Moses foretold that the people of Israel would break the covenant. But God said he wouldn't break the covenant on his end. He would confirm the covenant. And so this covenant at Moab, its function by building on the previous covenants is a way of confirming the covenant at Horeb so that the people of Israel can be God's people and will indeed live up to their end of the bargain. Mm. The people of Israel will obey God's voice. They will follow his commands. They will do all that he speaks through this covenant at Moab.
And Moses goes on a little bit later here to say, "Now not with you alone am I making this covenant and this oath, but both with those who stand here with us today in the presence of Adonai our God, and with those who are not with us here today." And as we just read, Moses said that the entire people of Israel was there standing in the presence of God. So Moses here is basically saying this isn't just for this generation of Israel. This is an oath that applies to all generations of Israel forever in perpetuity. In fact, this entire covenant here at Moab is very future focused. Yes, there's the implication of current disobedience and current obedience gets curses or blessings, but it's all in the focus of prophetic fulfillment. It's all in the context of eventually you will go astray from the Torah, and so eventually you will get these curses, but then as we're going to see here, eventually God will bring you back.
Yeah, so ultimately the purpose of this covenant is to establish Israel at that moment as God's people in perpetuity. All Israelis forever are coming under this covenant, which has blessings, has curses, and yet unconditionally, the focus and future fulfillment of this covenant is that Israel is God's people.
So what we read next in this portion is that Moses basically says that future disobedience from the people of Israel will bring the curses of the Torah onto the people of Israel. He starts out by talking about individual Israelis who get so prideful that even though they hear the curses in the Torah, they're like, "Well, I can be stubborn and it won't do anything bad." And then God will end up punishing that person and destroying that person and bringing all the curses of the Torah on that person. And Moses goes on to say that in the future, there will be a later generation to come where the entire people will be so wicked that God will bring the curses on the entire people of Israel, and God will punish them and exile them, as we covered in the last portion. And at that point, all the surrounding nations, the Gentiles, they'll say, "Why did God do this to this people and to this land?" And they'll say, "It's because they forsook the God of their fathers, and they went and followed other false gods." And it's for that reason that God destroyed the nation of Israel and scattered them abroad, and he struck them in his anger. So like we've already said, this whole covenant is very future focused. And so we already covered all the curses of the Torah in the last portion, and it was conditional. If you disobey, then God will do these curses. But now Moses is saying in this covenant, you will disobey and you will get the curses of the covenant.
Like we were already saying, this covenant is unconditional with the goal of confirming Israel's status as God's people. And yet, the blessings and the curses are part of this covenant, and those are conditional. If you obey God, you get the blessing. If you disobey God, you get the curse. And so this speaks to this concept of a person who hears the covenant and he thinks, "I'll be safe even though I walk in the stubbornness of my heart." So this is a person who hears the covenant and he's like, "Oh, he's confirming that Israel's God's people, so I'm going to be safe." But he's missing the curses are part of this covenant too. Even though God is going to make this covenant with Israel and it's making Israel God's people forever, at the same time, it will result in very bad things for those who disobey God. It's like what we've talked about before about this concept of God disciplining Israel as a man disciplines his son. Discipline causes pain. It involves punishment when you stray from the right way. The goal is righteousness. The goal is making someone a better person, making them able to receive the blessing. But the discipline of the curses of the covenant has to come first. So these people who think, I'll be safe because the covenant has the good of Israel at heart, they're missing that they need discipline. And so if they reject that discipline, if they don't understand that the purpose is to put them on the right path, then they're missing the whole point and they will be struck by the curses. So even though Israel is God's people unconditionally, and that's what this covenant was made to confirm, on the other hand, that doesn't guarantee that the people of Israel will receive the blessings of this covenant. Instead, because they're God's people, they can expect discipline to become the righteous people of God that they were made to be. Now, there's another interesting thing that Moses says here. He says, the secret things belong to Adonai, our God, but the things that are revealed belong to us and to our children forever, that we may do all the words of this Torah. So I found this verse interesting for a number of reasons. The first of which is that it specifically says that the things that are revealed belong to the people of Israel and to their children forever. And of course, he says this in the context of the covenant and the people of Israel doing all the words of the Torah. And so this really shows that concept of the things which Moses has revealed to the people of Israel, the things which are declared in the Torah, these were given to the people of Israel as a sort of special grant. Paul talks about this in Romans when he talks about how his brothers, the Israelis, have the Torah giving and the covenant. These are things which God specifically gave to the people of Israel, and that's one of the things that makes them so unique.
And he also says in Romans 3, what then is the superiority of the Yehudi, of the Jew, and what is the advantage gained by circumcision? Much in every way. For first, indeed, they were entrusted with the sayings of God. God gave the scriptures to the Jewish people. They were entrusted to Israel. And so as God was revealing things to mankind, he was doing that through the Jewish people, and that is their heritage forever.
And yet, he didn't just do that arbitrarily. He did it for a reason. As it says here, the things that are revealed belong to us and to our children forever, that we may do all the words of this Torah. So the people of Israel weren't just given the Torah so that they would have a superiority. They were given the Torah to do it. We've talked about before how the Torah is one of the ways that Israel is different from all the other nations and how that points all the nations to God. And so we also see here that this covenant here that's being made at Moab comes with this intention of certifying that the people of Israel have these commands as something that belongs to them for the purpose of doing them, for the purpose for which they were called to be God's people, of being a light to all the nations, being a holy nation, which is God's kingdom of priests and brings all the nations near to God. And then the other thing I want to talk about this verse is this concept that there are some things which God keeps hidden and then there are some things which God reveals to us. Obviously, we don't have the mind of God. We don't know what he knows. We don't see what he sees. We don't think the way he thinks. There are some things which God has simply reserved for himself and himself alone to know. And he is glorified through that. On the other hand, there are a lot of things that he has chosen to reveal to us. And of course, this book contains that revelation. And so what God put in here for us to know, this belongs to us. We can read this and learn from this and delight in this. And most importantly, we can know what to do from it. God revealed these things so that they belong to us so that we may do all the words. God has not given us to know everything, but what he has given us to know is what we need to do so that we know how to serve him. So when we encounter struggles, when there are things we don't know, things we want to know, we have to be content to lay it all at God's feet and say, I don't know everything. You know everything. There are some things that you haven't told me. I wish you would. But even if you don't, I'm content with that. Glory to you for the things you keep hidden. But thank you for giving me your word. Reveal to me from your word what you want me to do. And then that is all we need. We can live on that. We can live just on what God reveals to us in the scriptures on how we are to live and to serve him.
So next, Moses moves on to prophesy the eventual restoration of the people of Israel back to the land of Israel. Basically, we've already read that it prophesies that the people of Israel will disobey God, they will stray from his ways, and they will get the curses of the Torah, and they will be exiled from the land, and the land will become desolate. But here, Moses is promising that they will come back. Chapter 30 begins, "So it shall be, when all these things have come upon you, the blessing and the curse which I have set before you, and you call them to mind in all the nations where Adonai your God has banished you, and you return to Adonai your God and obey him with all your heart and soul, according to all that I command you today, you and your sons, then Adonai your God will restore you from captivity and have compassion on you and will gather you again from all the peoples where Adonai your God has scattered you. If your outcasts are at the ends of the earth, from there Adonai your God will gather you, and from there he will bring you back. Adonai your God will bring you into the land which your fathers possessed, and you shall possess it, and he will prosper you and multiply you more than your fathers." So this covenant is now prophesying that the people of Israel, as they are in exile, they will remember the blessing and the curse, and they will remember the Torah, and then they will seek after God. This is similar to something that we read in a previous Torah portion where it says, "You will seek me and you will find me if you search with all your heart." So Moses is saying that when the people of Israel are in captivity, they will seek God and they will start to obey God according to the Torah. And when that happens, God will bring all of them back to the land. Every Jew to the ends of the earth, they will be brought back to the promised land when this covenant is fully fulfilled. I'm reminded of what the prophet Jeremiah says in chapter 31 when he says, "Restrain your voice from weeping and your eyes from tears, for your work will be rewarded, declares Adonai, and they will return from the land of the enemy. I have surely heard Ephraim grieving. You have chastised me. Bring me back that I may be restored, for you are Adonai my God. For after I turned back, I repented. I was ashamed and also humiliated because I bore the reproach of my youth. Is Ephraim my dear son? Is he a delightful child? Indeed, as often as I have spoken against him, I certainly still remember him. Therefore, my heart yearns for him. I will surely have mercy on him, declares Adonai. Return, O virgin Israel, return to these your cities." So Jeremiah is prophesying about the same basic thing that Moses is prophesying about, specifically actually referring to the northern kingdom of Israel, saying that in the future, the people of Israel will repent. They will say, "I'm sorry, God, I sinned against you. Please bring me back." And God is promising, "I will bring you back. I will restore you. I'll bring back the scattered of Israel from the ends of the earth. Anywhere they are, I will bring them back." And this same promise of bringing back the people of Israel from their captivity is found all throughout the prophets. And we see that it starts all the way back here in the Torah with the prophet Moses. Moses promises that the people of Israel will repent. They will say, "I'm sorry, God, for abandoning you, and I will follow you." And then God will hear and he will have mercy and show love and kindness to the people of Israel and bring us back to our land in the land of Israel.
This promise that Moses is making, that the people of Israel will one day all repent and return to God, and then God will gather them from all the nations where they've gone and bring them back to their land, this is a promise that ultimately finds its fulfillment in the Messiah, the son of David. The prophet Isaiah makes a prophecy about the Messiah when he talks about the root of Jesse, Jesse being the father of David. So he's talking about a descendant of David's house who is going to be the savior of Israel. And he says, "In that day, the root of Jesse, who shall stand as a signal for the peoples, of him shall the nations inquire, and his resting place shall be glorious. He will raise a signal for the nations and will assemble the banished of Israel and gather the dispersed of Judah from the four corners of the earth. Mm. You will say in that day, I will give thanks to you, Adonai, for though you were angry with me, your anger turned away that you might comfort me. Behold, God is my salvation. I will trust and will not be afraid, for Adonai is my strength and my song, and he has become my salvation. So Isaiah is prophesying that when the people of Israel return to God, his anger will turn away from them and he will comfort them. And more than that, he will become their salvation. He will give them salvation. He will give them the Son of David, Yeshua, who will gather all of the people of Israel from all the nations where they've been scattered. And more than that, he will be a signal for the peoples. Of him will the nations inquire. So like we've been talking about how Israel's job is to be God's people, to be a light to all the nations and a signal for all of them, Yeshua embodies that more than anyone else. Mm. He will be that signal to all the peoples, and he will be that signal when he brings the people back to their land, when he brings Israel back and they are following God and God's wrath is removed from the people of Israel because they have turned from their sin and are following him with their whole hearts.
And speaking of following God with all their hearts, Moses moves on to talk about how when the people of Israel are returned back to the land, that Adonai will circumcise the hearts of the people of Israel. We talked about the concept of the people of Israel needing to circumcise their hearts in a previous portion in Deuteronomy, where basically Moses was saying, yes, you're the people of Israel, you have the covenants of Abraham, but at the same time, you need to have that internally. You need to circumcise your heart and be like Abraham and walk in faith and not stubbornness. And just in the last portion, we read that God had not yet given them a heart to know or eyes to see or ears to hear. But here, Moses says, moreover, Adonai your God will circumcise your heart and the heart of your descendants, to love Adonai your God with all your heart and with all your soul, so that you may live. And you shall again obey Adonai and observe all his commandments, which I command you today. For Adonai will again rejoice over you for good, just as he rejoiced over your fathers, if you obey Adonai your God to keep his commandments and his statutes, which are written in this book of the Torah, if you turn to Adonai with all your heart and soul. So God is promising that when he brings back the people of Israel to the land of Israel, and he's doing that after they've repented and turned to God and started seeking his ways, when that happens, God will circumcise the hearts of the people of Israel so that they will obey him and seek him with all their heart and soul. So it's kind of a twofold thing. First, they turn to God, and when they turn to God, God will circumcise their hearts, and then they will follow God. And of course, when they're following God, then they'll get all the blessings of the Torah, and God will delight over them to do them good, as opposed to doing the curses of the Torah and bringing that upon them. So this is what we were talking about when we were saying that the entire purpose of this covenant is that Israel will follow God's commands and will be his people. It's promising that even though they will stray from God's ways, they will come back and God will circumcise their hearts so that way they will never, ever stray again and they will live in his land forever and be his people.
And this concept of circumcising their hearts once again goes back to the previous covenants, namely the covenant with Abraham, the covenant of circumcision. God had promised to Abraham that his descendants would be a nation that would be a blessing to all the families of the earth, and he gave him the mark of circumcision as a sign of that covenant. And then he gave the covenant at Sinai to bring the people of Israel into that peoplehood so that they could be that nation that was promised to Abraham. But they couldn't do it, so God is saying, I will circumcise your hearts. I will put the mark of that peoplehood, the mark of that promised nation in you, so that you will be that blessing to all the families of the earth.
And so what Moses is talking about here in Deuteronomy 30, again, it ties into the new covenant, which God talks about in Jeremiah 31. We've quoted it over and over and over again throughout the Torah portions because the Torah keeps pointing to it. But the new covenant says that God will write the Torah on the hearts of the people of Israel, and they will all know him from the least of them to the greatest of them, and they will be his people, and he will be their God. So all of that about God circumcising their hearts so that they will follow his commands, that's found in Jeremiah 31, the new covenant, which of course comes through the Master Yeshua. But I also want to talk about the new covenant from the prophet Ezekiel, because he covers it from a different angle. And so Ezekiel, he actually says, "Moreover, I will give you a new heart, and I will put a new spirit within you, and I will remove the heart of stone from your flesh and give you a heart of flesh. I will put my spirit within you and cause you to walk in my statutes, and you will be careful to observe my ordinances. You will live in the land that I gave to your forefathers, so you will be my people, and I will be your God." And then a little bit later, he ties in the concept of the Messiah, the Davidic king, saying, "My servant David will be king over them, and they will all have one shepherd, and they will walk in my ordinances and keep my statutes and observe them. They will live on the land that I gave to Jacob, my servant, in which your fathers lived. I will make a covenant of peace with them. It will be an everlasting covenant with them. And I will place them and multiply them and will set my sanctuary in their midst forever. And I will be their God and they will be my people. And the nations will know that I am Adonai who sanctifies Israel when my sanctuary is in their midst forever." So this passage is absolutely epic. And it speaks to the concept of God giving Israel a new heart by giving them his spirit. Just like how physical circumcision is removing the foreskin from the flesh, in this case, God is removing the heart of stone from the people of Israel and giving them a new heart, a heart of flesh, and a heart which will love God and will follow his commands so that they will walk in his statutes. And this explicitly comes when the Davidic king is reigning over the people of Israel, and they're all living in the land of Israel, and they will be his people, and he will be their God. And Ezekiel even ties in that the nations, the Goyim, the Gentiles, will all know that Adonai is the God who sanctifies Israel. And so this is basically saying that when the people of Israel are brought into the new covenant and they circumcise their hearts and they all follow God and they all accept the Messiah, when that happens, that will be a light and a beacon of salvation to the ends of the earth. It's all here and it's amazing. And it's found all the way back in the Torah. Moses goes ahead and hints at it, and he points in the direction, he points to Yeshua. All the way back in the Torah, he's pointing to the new covenant and how the Torah, yes, it gets Israel started on the road, but it's all pointing to when the new covenant is established with the people of Israel.
Yeah, I mean, Moses is making this covenant here at Moab, but part of the covenant is this promise that he will make this new covenant that is talked about in Ezekiel and Jeremiah. So he's covenanting to make a covenant. And of course, like he says here, the goal is so that you will love Adonai your God with all your heart and with all your soul, that you may live. So right here, he's outlining this is the way to life for the people of Israel. They're going to have life when this happens, when God circumcises their hearts, specifically when they love Adonai their God with all their heart and all their soul, which, as he talked about in the beginning of Deuteronomy, is the bedrock of the whole Torah. That's what all of this is based on. And so Moses is saying right here, this is going to be possible only through the new covenant. The Torah is fulfilled in the new covenant. And that's what Moses is promising right here to the people of Israel. He's saying, you are entering into a covenant today that you are going to be God's people starting today, even though you already started back then. But it is established, it is forever, and it is even more set in stone starting today. And it is all going to be pointing to that day when he makes another covenant beyond this covenant. This is basically the last words of Moses. This is Moses' final task that God has given him, one last message to deliver to the people of Israel.
This is the climax of the Torah.
Yeah, and it's basically his last job is to make this covenant. This covenant, all the Torah has been building to with this, the work of the Torah is finished, and yet it is pointing to something beyond it. The Torah is not an end in and of itself. The Torah has all been building to the day when God will make this covenant, when he will circumcise their hearts, remove the stone, and put in the heart of flesh. And They will all know him, and they will all love him with all that they are, and they will keep everything that was in this book because it was all building to that day, which will come when they all turn to Yeshua.
We're pumped. We're amped up. We're really amped up.
We should be.
Now, after Moses prophesies about the circumcision of the heart that God is going to give to the people of Israel, he moves on to discuss how the commands of the Torah that he is giving to the people of Israel, it's not too difficult for them to do. They are able to do it if they just love God. Moses says, "For this commandment which I command you today is not too difficult for you, nor is it out of reach. It is not in the heaven that you should say, 'Who will go to heaven for us to get it for us and make us hear it that we may observe it?' Nor is it beyond the sea that you should say, 'Who will cross the sea for us to get it for us and make us hear it that we may observe it?' But the word is very near you, in your mouth and in your heart, that you may observe it." So Moses is teaching something really fundamental, which is that the people of Israel don't need a middleman between them and the commandments of God. The commandments have already been given to them. That's why Moses went up the mountain at Mount Horeb, was to give them the commands. He went up there, he got them, and he brought them down. But now they have it. They don't need anyone else to go and get it for them. Moses has already given it to them. The scriptures are already right here in a book for us to read. So we don't need someone else to digest it and give it to us. But rather, the commandment is not out of reach and is not too difficult. God is not commanding something for the people of Israel that is physically impossible to do. Israel is perfectly capable of doing this, and they are expected to do this. And so if the word is in their mouth and in their heart, then they can do it. No problem. The only question is, will they have the word in their mouth and in their heart so that they'll do it? As we've been talking about, the people of Israel need to love Adonai their God with all their heart and soul and mind and strength. And also how they need to be constantly repeating it to their children and remembering it in their own minds, basically having the commands with them all the time in their minds and in their hearts. So if they're actually doing that, actually speaking the commands and having the commands in their heart, then they'll be able to do the commands in their actions. But the question is, will they have a heart to actually love God and do his commands?
And the answer to that question is no. We've already been talking about how Moses knows and has said right here that the people of Israel don't have the heart to listen. And they've demonstrated by their actions time and time again that they are stubborn and rebellious and they won't do it. But the point is that they can do it if they have the heart. And yet, they can only do it if they have the heart, because as we have already said, the bedrock of it is their heart, if they will love God with all their heart. So this command is simple. It is attainable, but it's not easy, especially if the people of Israel don't have the right heart. Paul actually references this passage from Moses in the context of a greater discussion when he's talking about how much he wants his brothers, the people of Israel, to accept Yeshua and be saved. He says, "Brothers, the pleasure of my heart indeed and my request for help to God for Israel is for salvation. For I bear them testimony that they have a zeal for God, but not according to knowledge. For not knowing the righteousness of God and looking to establish their own righteousness, they did not submit to the righteousness of God. For a goal of Torah is Messiah, for righteousness to everyone who is believing." So Paul is saying here that despite what Moses said, that the word was right there with them and it's not too hard for them, the people of Israel did not know God's righteousness. They had the Torah right there, and yet they didn't know God's righteousness because they were too busy trying to establish their own righteousness. Moses had already told them, it's right there, you can do it, you don't need to send someone across the sea to go get it. But the people of Israel were saying, I've got to get the righteousness. Even though Moses said, you don't need to get it, it's right there. And Paul is pointing out that if they submitted to that righteousness to the Torah, instead of trying to get righteousness for themselves, if they submitted to God's righteousness, then they would find that the Torah is pointing to Messiah. Mm. Like we've just been talking about how all of it has been building to this, which points to the new covenant in Yeshua. Torah's whole purpose is embodied in pointing to Yeshua. He's the goal of it. And so if they just submit to that righteousness that's right there in the Torah, they will find it being fulfilled in Yeshua. And so Paul goes on, indeed, Moshe describes the righteousness that is of the Torah, that the man who did them will live in them. But the righteousness of faith speaks this way. You should not say in your heart, who will go up to the heaven, that is, to bring Messiah down, or who will go down to the abyss, that is, to bring up Messiah out of the dead. But what does it say? The word is near you, in your mouth and in your heart. That is the word of faith that we proclaim, that if you confess with your mouth Yeshua is Master and believe in your heart that God raised him out of the dead, you will be saved. For with the heart one believes, leading to righteousness, and with the mouth confession is made, leading to salvation. For the scripture says, everyone who is believing on him will not be ashamed. So on the one hand, you've got a different passage in which Moshe says the man who did them will live in them, that the people of Israel need to do the commands to have life. I mean, we already talked about this earlier in this portion, how when he circumcises their hearts, then they will love Adonai with all their hearts and all their souls, that they may live. And yet, doing the Torah in and of itself isn't what gives life. Yes, the people of Israel will live if they keep the Torah, and if not, then they'll get the curses which result in death. But that only works if they have the right heart, and having the heart doesn't come from doing the Torah. That's the part that Moses says actually is the easy part, because the word is right there. They don't need to work for that. They just need to have it in their mouth and in their heart. And Paul says that comes down to faith. The word is right there with you. You just have to believe and take it. And the word is that if you confess with your mouth Yeshua is Master and believe in your heart that God raised him out of the dead, you will be saved. If you believe in Yeshua and accept his sacrifice, then you're putting that in your heart. You're accepting the circumcision of the heart. That's all you have to do, is accept it. It's not far away, because Yeshua, he went up to the heaven. He already went to God. He intercedes for us. No one else needs to do that work. We certainly don't need to do that work. Instead, he came down and brought salvation to us, and he went up, he came out of the dead, so that we can be raised out of the dead to life. And so Paul says, with the heart one believes, leading to righteousness. If we believe, then the word is in our heart, and then we have righteousness.
Boom, just like that, we're righteous.
And that's where the man who did them will live in them ties in that if we accept that circumcision of the heart, then we will love God with all our hearts and all our souls, and we'll do everything that he commands, and we will have life. But the life comes because we believe, and that belief also leads to righteousness. So the whole Torah finds its fulfillment in faith. All the commands that Moses gave, they're completely worthless if not for faith. And yet, faith is incredibly simple. All you have to do is believe in Yeshua. The word is right there. In fact, Paul says the faith is by hearing a report, and the report is heard through a spoken word of the Messiah. The report of what Messiah did is the point at which faith can be received, because that report went everywhere. Everyone has heard it, and it's in the scriptures. Everyone can hear it if they just read it. And then if you believe that, then you can receive that word, which is everywhere, and you can receive it into your heart, and then you have the righteousness, you have the salvation, and you have the life.
Just to build a little bit more on this concept that Paul is talking about, I wanted to talk a little bit more about faith and actions, going to the book of Yaakov, where he says, Avraham, our father, was he not declared righteous by actions, having brought up Yitzchak, Isaac, his son, upon the altar? Do you see that the faith was working with his actions, and by the actions the faith was perfected? And fulfilled was the scripture that is saying, and Abraham believed God, and it was credited to him to righteousness. So this verse from the Torah that says Abraham believed God, and it was credited to him to righteousness, that actually happens before Abraham offered his son Isaac on the altar. The belief, the faith that made him righteous, that came first, and then that righteousness was worked out in his actions, and that's how he was definitely declared righteous, was he had the faith, and then he worked the faith. So that's how we have the Torah says, it is near to you in your heart, and then it says, you can do it, and if you do it, you'll live in it. The righteousness of Scripture, the righteousness of Torah, the righteousness of Messiah, it's all started in faith. You believe God, you have that in your heart, and then you say it with your mouth, And then from there, you do the righteousness in your actions. That is the entire point of Torah. And if you just try to start with the actions, but you don't have the right heart, then that will get you nowhere.
Yeah, once again, like we've been saying, everything Moses is talking about here is building on the previous covenants. And ultimately, those covenants trace back to Abraham, who received them because he had faith. He believed God, and it was credited to him to righteousness. So even from Genesis, it's been building to this point that it's not hard. You can do it. Abraham did it, and he didn't have all these rules. He just believed God. Mm. So Moses is drawing from what came before, all the way back to the faith of Abraham, and is pointing to what comes ahead, which is the faith in Yeshua, which gives life everlasting.
And finally, this portion wraps up with the final words of this covenant at Moab, where Moses is basically saying, I've given you the blessing and the curse. Choose life. Choose God. Choose his commands. Choose the right way that leads to life. And so what he says here is, I call on heaven and earth to witness against you today that I have set before you life and death, the blessing and the curse. So choose life in order that you may live, you and your descendants, by loving Adonai your God, by obeying his voice, and by holding fast to him, for he is your life and the length of your days, that you may live in the land which Adonai swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give them. So Moses is saying, yeah, I've told you everything. There's life and death. You have this choice, but you should choose life. That is the only right choice here. Death is obviously the wrong choice, but this is the way to life, is to love Adonai your God and to keep his commands. God himself is life. He's the only way to life, and so you need to choose God. But nonetheless, even though there's a right choice and a wrong choice, the choice is still up to the people of Israel. It is in their hands. It is their decision. And Moses is saying, make the right choice for your sake and for your descendants' sake. Because if you make the wrong choice, it's death.
We were just talking about how simple it is for the people of Israel to keep these commands because they're so near to them. All they have to do is accept them. But they do have to accept them. So that's right here what Moses is saying. It's right here, but you have to choose. Choose life. It's an act of choice. He's not saying choose life or choose death. If they don't choose life, the result will be death.
Yeah, it's a binary choice. There's no middle ground, life or death.
And it kind of shows that death is the default choice. Mm. The people of Israel have to actively decide to choose. It shouldn't be too hard for them. But again, it all comes down to faith. For everything that Moses has commanded them, it all comes down to this choice. And this choice is a choice made in faith. Mm. Because like Moses says, this involves loving Adonai your God, obeying his voice, and holding fast to him. Mm. For he is your life and length of days. That's what faith is about. It's not just about believing, but it's about being strong and having God as what you anchor to. Mm. Choosing life involves deciding, God, you are my life. I can't live without you. I need you. I will hold on to you with everything I have. Mm. And so no matter what is thrown at you, what doubts, what temptations, what fears, what persecutions, in all of that, you hold on to God like your life depends on it, because it does. And so that's the choice you have to make every single day. And if you choose that, then your days will be long, because as long as you're holding on to him, you do have life, because he is life.
And I think that an excellent way to finish off this portion is to remember what Yeshua says, where he says, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. God has given only one way to life, and that way is through Yeshua. Yeshua is the Messiah, the one who will bring back the dispersed people of Israel, the one who will circumcise the hearts of the people of Israel, and who will circumcise the hearts of everyone, Jew and Gentile, who will draw near to him in the new covenant. Moses has been pointing to this the whole time, and the entirety of Scripture points straight to Yeshua and testifies about him. And so we need to choose life, and that life is Yeshua. All throughout the Torah, going all the way back to the Garden of Eden in Genesis, the options were life or death, the tree of life or the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, the forbidden tree, the tree of sin. And of course, humanity chose the wrong choice and they ended up in death. And so they were then separated from God. And so that whole time, from Adam all the way to Noah, the world was shut in to death, essentially, because they were locked into their own sin and there was no way back to God. But starting with Abraham, the path to God was being made through the promised people, through the covenants of God, pointing to the Master Yeshua. And so from Abraham to Moses, that is further locked in, and it's all pointing to how the Messiah will bring us back, and he is the only way to salvation. And this isn't just about life here. This is about everlasting life. Yeshua is the only way to everlasting life and to restoration and the repair of our relationship with God. And so if we really want to choose life, then we have to choose Yeshua. We need to choose to follow him, choose to give our hearts and our mouths and our actions and give everything to him, believe in our hearts, confess with our mouths that Yeshua is the Messiah and that God raised him out of the dead to be our master.
So I think the big takeaway from this portion is choose life in Messiah. Moses presented the people of Israel with a binary choice, life or death. God was offering them a way to life. They just had to have the faith to walk in that way. But ultimately, as Josiah said, Yeshua is the only way to life in the Father. And so all of us need to have faith in him. We need to believe in our hearts and confess with our mouths that he is the Messiah. And we need to have the kind of faith that will hold fast to him and follow him and obey him and listen to his voice, knowing that he is our life and we depend on him for everything.
That wraps up the portion of Nitzavim. Next time we'll be looking at the portion of Vayalech, so be sure to tune in for that. Thanks so much for watching. Be sure to like, share, comment, subscribe, and hit the notification bell to keep updated on new videos. And if you would, please consider sending us a donation to help us make more videos like these. We would really appreciate it. Thanks again for watching, and we'll see you next time. God bless.